This week on the Packet Pushers, we have a sponsored show with Ixia Communications, or most of us would just know them as Ixia. Now, I'm fairly sure that most of you will not have heard the name unless you are one of those people who are deeply into the security and packet capture market, where you need to have like strong visibility, strong knowledge of what's going into your network so you can feed it into your visibility tools, proxy servers, IDSs, things like that. And if you've been working in the era of network taps, visibility fabrics, and those sorts of technologies, then Ixia may be familiar with you because they've been around for a very long time. And if, like me, you spent many years diving into the DMZ, you would know that it's actually a critical part of high security and regulated infrastructures and things like that. But things are changing. We're now into the era of the public cloud, and systems are actually moving outside of the data center walls. They're leaving the castle and crossing the moat and heading off into the public cloud. And our traditional security tools are starting to, well, show that they're not ready for the next era. So what we're talking today is largely about how Ixia is adapting to the era of the public cloud and get you the ability to see what's happening on those machines, in those instances, on those applications, in the public cloud, but still able to stitch it together to what's happening in your private data center. Thanks very much for joining us today. I'm Greg Farrow, and with me is Ethan Banks. We are also joined by the team from Ixia. We've got Recep Ozdag, who's the vice president, Chris Rani, senior architect, and Murali Alada, who's a principal software engineer. They're going to be telling us all the stories. So, Recep, why don't you start off quickly and give us a very brief as you like, intro to what Ixia is for the people in the audience who may not be familiar with you.
Sure. Thanks, Greg and Ethan, for hosting us and for that introduction. So my name is Recep Ozdag. I am the Vice President of Product Management and Marketing for the Network Visibility Solutions Division of Ixia. And really, this division was established back in around 2012 with the acquisition of two well-known companies in the visibility space. One is NetOptics, and the other one is Anui. And really, and you'll be using the words visibility and monitoring interchangeably, but really the goal with visibility is to eliminate what is known in the industry as blind spots. So, and blind spots really exist in every network. And the way that we think about it is that it's really not a question about if, it's really a question about when lead to a big problem. It can be a big problem in the security space, application performance, or network performance. And really, in an on-premise data center, not in the cloud, but traditionally on-premise data center, customers use the Ixia visibility solutions typically in two ways, either to improve the information and insights that they get from their out-of-band tools, so that's out-of-band. And the other one is that really to, I would say, ensure fail-safe deployments of inline security tools. So typically, you'll have this visibility fabric that consists of taps to access data, those are physical taps, and then intelligent network packet brokers really to groom the data so that you can send the right information to the right tool. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's the bypass switches that you can allow to bring the fabric inline. Now, these solutions work great on on-premise because you have access to everything. You can actually physically connect these. Well, what happens as you might get to the cloud? Because there's this misconception that, hey, as I move to the cloud, I don't have to worry about security, application performance or network performance or even maybe compliance because, hey, I put it on the cloud. That can be Amazon, Azure, Google, pick your favorite vendor, and they'll take care of it because everything just works fine. And of course, what we're realizing is that that's not really true. In fact, not only do we need to address these issues, but in fact, we have a harder job because now we don't even have access to the infrastructure, right? It's not like on-prem. So you can't even getting packet-level data to understand what's happening is really tricky. So the question is, what do you do?
Plead ignorance? Ignorance is not an excuse. I mean, you stand up in front of the PCI, the MasterCard or the Visa people and say, oh, well, we moved our app to the cloud, but we didn't think about that. We didn't know, It doesn't really cut it, does it? Which is what a lot of people actually do.
Yeah, exactly. And I think also a lot of people tend to have this attitude of, well, I'm just going to take my virtual solutions and take a lift and shift and run in the cloud. So if there's a VM on my private data center, I'm just going to run it as is on a public cloud. The problem, of course, is that you really want to develop something cloud native to take advantage of the cloud technologies and to be able to scale. So we think that we have a great solution that could benefit anybody who is in the cloud, was willing to, interest in moving to the cloud, but have these issues that they want to address first. So that's what we're here to talk about. And the good thing is that we have the architect and the developer of the solution, which is called CloudLens. So I'll hand it off to Chris and Murali, and they'll take it from here.
So Cloud Lens really comes down to addressing just what Recep is mentioning, just providing in the first place access to the packet data to do security and monitoring and visibility. It's kind of a recurring story that I hear is the companies that are migrating to the cloud, they do all these plans about how they're going to move all their applications. They plan on how to stage it out. And then, you know, as the day comes when it's going to begin, they suddenly go to their security team and say, okay, now go ahead and set up the IDS in the cloud. And what they find is that there's actually not a practical way to set up an IDS in the cloud currently.
I mean, setting up an IDS in the cloud would be, this really comes down to a problem of we're not dealing with traditional networking up in the cloud. We're dealing with a cloud infrastructure that we're in, the networking is handled for us, as opposed to switches and cables that we've plumbed together and network taps we can drop in place and route around packets wherever we need them. Now we're in a situation of, well, here's the data up in the cloud, routed around however it is, and we don't have an easy way to get at those packets and push them to an IDS appliance that can do inspection for us.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And IDS is just an example. There's all kinds of monitoring things you might want to do. And yeah, because now your network infrastructure doesn't belong to you, it belongs to the cloud provider. You can't just go plug in a tap. And they, you know, not only do they not just give you the access to do that, they actively try to prevent that because they have multiple tenants, right? And they can't have you plug in a tap and pick up your competitor's traffic that happens to be in the same, you know, public cloud data center. So they're actually kind of working against your requirement to go see these packets and do something. And sort of the common wisdom is that the way to address this is that security is going to move into the app. And I'm fairly skeptical of that. And the issue being that an app developer, the requirements they are trying to address are in a lot of ways kind of diametrically opposed to the requirements that the security guy is trying to address. You know, they're trying to rule out new features, make them very easy to access. The security guy is trying to set up, you know, gates and protections and things, and those things to a certain extent kind of fight. And so the idea that the app developer is going to take care of security is kind of dumping two things together that don't really go that way. You know, it's like,
Chris, there's a couple of things here. I mean, one is we've been talking about security, but for those of us that have built visibility fabrics, I mean, security is definitely one aspect of it, but there's another aspect just of, you know, troubleshooting and sorting out what's actually happening between a couple of endpoints that aren't working properly. I mean, are we seeing that as a demand still, or is the focus really security?
Definitely, that's a demand too. I tend to focus on security because it's it makes it a more concrete discussion. This is a certain example that you can talk about, but yeah, I mean, that's just one example of lots. You know, people want to do diagnostics, they want to monitor performance, they want to look for misconfigurations, they want to it's kind of an open-ended problem. There's lots of things people need to do by looking at what's going on in their network.
So, and another point of clarification here about Cloud Lens specifically, we are talking about this as a visibility fabric tool. In other words, I can use this tool in the cloud to route my public cloud traffic to wherever it needs to go or whatever tool it needs to go to for analysis. We're not talking about Cloud Lens actually doing analysis.
That's right. Yeah, it's really it's kind of the plumbing, or you might think of it kind of like UPS. Right. Our goal is to get the packets from where they are to where they need to be so that you can do the analysis. We don't do the analysis, just like the UPS guy. You know, when you order something from Amazon Marketplace, they go get it from the warehouse and they drop it off at your house. They don't open the pack or do some kind of analysis on it. An important point here is we're trying to build a common infrastructure for any kind of tool, that the monitoring tool that you might use, rather than, you know, kind of the state of things in the absence of Cloud Lens is that if you have a security tool, it's going to have its own fabric, and then you have some other tool and it'll have its own fabric. And you know, with all these agents and things installed all over the place, kind of doing a redundant job of getting packets where they're supposed to go. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to build more like an ecosystem where these tools can easily plug in and get packets, and they don't have to worry about how the packets get to the tool. We take care of that, and we can kind of do the work for multiple different kinds of tools all at once.
You just said something interesting there, you know, that there's, you know, plugins and, you know, and so on, which is really different from building out a physical visibility fabric where you're not so worried about that. It's really a packet routing exercise on a physical level. But when you get into cloud and trying to deploy a solution like this in the cloud, it's a different animal, and you've got different ways that you're hooking into the infrastructure to actually get access to those packets and so on.
Yeah, that's true. And so what we try to do is for, you know, kind of our, what we think of as our partners, the ones who do the monitoring tools and security tools, we try to take this cloud packet problem and turn it into a problem that's very familiar. So we gather all the packets and deliver them essentially on a virtual interface. So for the tool, it's just like listening on a physical interface. They just listen on this interface, the packets will arrive there. That problem in and of itself of just getting the packets, that's actually only a portion of the problem working in the cloud. The other aspect of this is, okay, so you're in the cloud, but your cloud application is not going to be structured like a data center application if you've really adopted the cloud. Because one of the main benefits of the cloud is you've got this kind of inexhaustible supply of resources that you can deploy things out to. And so when you have demand, you can spin up lots and lots of resources and take on that demand. And then importantly, because it's a public cloud, when your demand goes down, you know, if let's say your Netflix and the weekend is over and people go back to work and stop watching movies, then you can kill off all those resources and you don't have to pay for them because it's a public cloud. So somebody else will pay for them during the day. You know, maybe it's NASDAQ or something.
I really thought going to work was what where you did watch your movies. I guess I'm misunderstanding a purpose there. Anyway, okay. So
we can't
you
all
said
be podcasters. Well,
now you mentioned, Chris, a notion of if your apps have been reconstructed to work in the cloud, which kind of sounds like you're going cloud native, and maybe you mean microservices and containers. Can you expand on that?
The way our solution works, we have an agent that installs in the customer instance that gathers the packets, and that is a container. Now, that doesn't mean that the customer's application has to be containers to use it. Our thing is a container, but it can listen to normal applications that aren't. But it also does work with customer applications that are containers. We're built natively in the cloud using cloud services that are designed to scale. And we've built it so that as the customer's application scales, we can autonomously kind of react to that. And one thing to think about, I mentioned that, you know, kind of common wisdom is security and these things move into the app. And so one approach to solving this problem of getting access to packets is to run things directly in the customer's application instances. I mean, and to a certain extent, we do that because we have run an agent. But if you're thinking about doing some kind of real task, like let's say you're watching for malware and you want to do that in the customer instance, that means that you got to take the network packets, you've got to reassemble them into the right order. Now you have the data. You know, that reassembly takes memory and CPU. And then now you've got to do a scan, which is probably a regular expression. And you're not just scanning for one piece of malware, you're scanning for maybe hundreds. So that's hundreds of scans. And that's a lot of CPU and memory and burden that's happening. And you're trying to load it into the customer instance that's trying to do, you know, go make money for this business. and so what we do, we install an agent, but it's not doing all that work right there. It's grabbing the packets and sending them off to a tool for analysis in a different place. And so the amount of work involved with that is much lower. So our resource needs are much lower than trying to do something in place in the customer's app.
So that sounds a little bit like what we do in physical networks, which is you have a network tap, and then the tap transports the packets away to a collection agent, carries them across the visibility fabric that you have in your private cloud. And then somewhere in the back end, there's a system where the packets are collected and then distributed off to apps. So what I'm sort of imagining is the physical network tap that we know is replaced by this agent, which is installed into the Linux or the Windows instance. I assume it's for multiple platforms. And then you use an encrypted connection from the agent away to your cloud platform, which is then your visibility fabric. Is that a fair map, or am I not getting that right?
That's pretty close. There is kind of a subtle nuance there that's worth going into. It is in a logical sense, it's very much the same thing where we're tapping and we have a visibility infrastructure. We're sending it off to somewhere for something else to do the work. But one thing that's important to note is, so we're running in the cloud. When we send these things off, it's not physically separate hardware. It's not a separate visibility infrastructure. It's in band, really, in the same infrastructure that's running the application. Now, what some other solutions try to do in this space is they try to pretend that there's a separate visibility infrastructure. So they introduce all of these VM appliances that the customer needs to launch in their environment, and they're handling packets and stuff. But in reality, all of those VM appliances are still borrowing the same physical infrastructure as the application. Now, in our case, we have worked, one of our fundamental goals really was to avoid the requirement of putting this extra virtual infrastructure in the customer environment that they
have. So that virtual infrastructure is like a firewall and all the packets flow through it, and then you can start to get the visibility.
Yes. Yeah.
Right? Or it, which is, you know, that's what firewalls are for. Why would you use a visibility fabric at that point?
Right. Yeah. Just do the, just make it an actual firewall.
or something like that. You know, like, why have an entire VM? That was the point of network taps, is that you didn't have to, the visibility fabric didn't actually force architectural decisions that locked you into an approach. It let you, you know, you put the visibility taps in and the security people did stuff without having to get involved in change control or operations or developers, and it just happened in the background. So you want to mirror that approach as much as possible, I guess.
Yes, we want to mirror it, but taking advantage of cloud technologies as well as not have the scale out problem. Right. So,
And so if you've got one VM, what happens if you exceed the size of one VM? You can't make it infinitely larger. You need 2, 3, 4 VMs, and then syncing multiple VMs becomes a major technical challenge, I guess.
Right. Right. Exactly. And so that's with our approach, what we've done, we have the agent that collects the packets on the source side, but something that's a little different in ours, and I think very important in addressing this that we're talking about, is that we also have an agent that lives on the tool side. So the thing that you're sending the packets to do the analysis, there's an agent there. Mm. And so if you think of the simple case with just one source and one tool, the source agent picks up the packets, it sticks them in a tunnel and delivers them peer-to-peer directly over to the tool instance, where they're taken off the tunnel and put on a virtual interface, and your tool now, you know, processes them. Now, so in the simple case, that seems very similar to tapping. But what's important is, okay, we're, the assumption is that on the source side, the customer is going to have autoscale and they're going to scale out. And so they have, meaning you're probably not going to have just one instance. They're going to have 2 and 10 and maybe 10,000. Mm-hmm. And so number one, we're built to scale up to that kind of numbers, 10,000, 100,000 instances.
Yeah.
Now, you can imagine on the tool side, though, as you scale up and you have 1,000 source instances, that tool instance is going to get overloaded. And so one of the very important aspects of our solutions, and the reason we run an agent on that side, is it's designed so that you can do exactly the same kind of scaling things over there using, you know, you can use your exact same autoscale mechanism, whatever you're comfortable with. Mm-hmm. So if the tool gets, you know, hits 80% CPU or whatever your metric is, just launch more instances. And what happens when you launch more instances is that the agents on the source side automatically divide themselves into subgroups. And so, you know, if you've gone from 1 to 2, half the agents will go to 1 and half the agents will go to the other.
So you've got some kind of a control plane where all these agents know about each other and can make those sorts of decisions.
That's right. Yeah. So all the agents phone home to a management service that we provide. That's not infrastructure that the customer has to manage. We manage that for them. So that all the customer has is these agents that live in their VMs. They manage the scale of their instances. And then we just kind of autonomously react to it.
You know what I really like about the agent part is that I don't have to pay for it. So the CPU burn and the memory burn, that actually goes to the DevOps people. So the actual instance where it's running, the cost is actually – whereas if I was running a VM inside of it, then I would have to fund that and pay for it myself out of my budget. So I'm quite fond of that idea.
Yeah, in terms of budget, in terms of, it's not just a matter of the cost of, you know, actually running the VM. It's if you're running, have to run the VM, you also have to now manage the scale of it. You have costs around, you know, operational costs of keeping track of these VMs and making sure they're up and running and they haven't failed and they have enough of them running and so on. And we're trying to get, we're trying to avoid putting that kind of extra requirements on the customer. I mean, they have enough trouble managing their own app to make their money. We don't want to add a lot of burden on top. And we've really invested a lot in removing that kind of burden.
Well, it's really important, too, that you're not missing traffic, especially with the security context that's been part of a lot of this conversation. You can't have a system where all of a sudden, because the application is needed to autoscale up to handle inbound load, now there's more traffic flowing through the system, and all of a sudden the visibility fabric's overwhelmed. That's not really acceptable. So it makes sense that you'd grow with it. As your ingestion needs grow, then you grow dynamically to match and then shrink back down. So it's a perfect cloud model, well matched to what's actually happening. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And because you can scale up and down, like, or in and out, I should say, you know, scale horizontally like this, launch more instances when you need them, you know, for monitoring, and then get rid of them when you stop needing them. It avoids the need to sort of predict what your demand actually is. You know, one of the issues is with kind of taking an existing hardware visibility solution and just moving it into the cloud as a VM, which is what a lot of people try and do, is that if you take that approach and you're not doing horizontal scaling, it means you have to size it for your maximum load.
Yes.
Which number one means you're paying the maximum price 24/7, which is bad. And so there's a cost savings there. But more importantly, it means you have to know what your maximum load is. And so if you're, which is basically impossible. If let's say your Super Bowl commercial airs, suddenly your demand goes up by a factor of 10. It's really hard to predict that. And like you say, if you haven't predicted it well enough, then it's going to be overloaded. And now you've got, you know, that's the prime opportunity for hackers to attack your system, is it's under stress. And your visibility is, you've gone blind to some of it.
Well, let's talk a bit about the requirements if I want to use Cloud Lens. Now, we've been talking very generically cloud, but are we talking specifically Amazon Web Services, Azure, Google Cloud Platform? Where does Cloud Lens fit in?
So I can talk a little bit about that. Currently, we're focused on Amazon Web Services. We do have future plans to support other platforms too. And one thing to think about here is we've made it as simple as possible for our customers to actually deploy our agents. We've by adopting Docker containers, we've made it simple for them to use their existing tools, whether it's Ansible or Kubernetes or Docker Compose, and fit into their existing DevOps processes to deploy our agents along with their applications.
Okay, so Amazon Web Services is the big thing as far as the public cloud that you support. Now, just curious, because I actually had an audience member ask me this, is Azure on the roadmap?
Yes, it is. There's actually one point I want to make about it. So when we say we're focused on Amazon Web Services, that doesn't mean that we've implemented it only for Amazon Web Services and we haven't thought about Azure yet. It really comes down to the promise of, you know, kind of guaranteed function. Right now, we've scoped AWS first because we want to get experience with AWS and make sure that we're giving very good service to our customers there. And then we'll focus on Azure and build out to make sure that we're giving very good service there. But the fact is that we've built it so that it works on Azure today. We're just not quite ready to make the promise of, if you run it in Azure, you know, it's definitely going to work in every situation. And so it's in terms of development, we've already built it for not only AWS, but Azure and GCP, and, you know, even on-site or on bare metal. All the agent, because it runs inside the OS, it works in all those places. And because the networking that we've chosen to use also works in all those places. So, for the tunnel. But we don't want to be making promises until, you know, we sort of build an experience base on those platforms.
No, it makes sense. I think, you know, as Azure continues to grow in popularity, people are going to look for that more and more. So, I'm quite sure that as long as it's coming, that's fine. People get that, and they also understand why. I mean, Amazon's got the biggest piece of the pie right now, for sure. Morale, I wanted to go back to something you had mentioned, which is, you know, containerization. So Cloud Lens is being delivered as a container, but yet there's also an agent that we're talking about. So help people understand. When they think of an agent, they would think of something that you load onto the operating system or onto a host, whereas a container is a self-contained delivery mechanism. So what part's container, what part's agent, or how should people understand those terms?
Right. So our entire agent is the Docker container. There's nothing other than the container that they need to run on their host. So everything is self-contained. It's just one single unit that people download from a public Docker Hub and run it on their machine.
Got it. And then, again, the big choice for delivering the agent in that way in a container form factor goes back to tooling. People that are using, as you mentioned, Kubernetes or Docker Compose, et cetera, that fits right into that scheme. If there are folks that aren't using Docker, perhaps, you know, they haven't made the leap to containers yet, they're more of a VM model in the cloud, does Cloud Lens fit in for them?
It does work for them. They will have to install Docker, but that doesn't mean they have to convert any of their existing stuff to Docker.
Okay. So you have to have some baseline of tooling just to deliver the agent, but it's not as if you have to have a fully containerized infrastructure in order to leverage this. This is just,
right.
You just need to be able to get this one piece installed, you know, via Docker, which actually isn't hard. I actually did it in an afternoon just playing around on a laptop. It's very straightforward.
Yeah, for a typical Linux system, if you're not running Docker today, you do an apt-get install Docker, and then once you have Docker, you do a Docker run of our agent, and you're good to go.
Mm-hmm. So within the Amazon world then, are there more requirements like the way my VPCs are set up or the way, you know, are there any peculiar requirements there that I would need to be aware of as I consider Cloud Lens?
We have one requirement that because our agents phone home to our management service, they need to have outgoing internet access. But that's really the limit of it. So when I talked about not adding burdens to our customers for you know running VMs, that going along with that, we made a very strong effort, and I think we've been very successful in trying to avoid adding network requirements. So, you know, something we kind of recommend if it works for the customer is to run their monitoring instances within the same VPC as whatever it is that it's monitoring, just because they won't incur data costs to go between VPCs and they'll have high bandwidth, low latency. But if that's something they don't want to do, they can certainly run the tools in a different VPC if they want. We will just cope with that. The tunnel that we set up is a peer-to-peer VPN tunnel. And it's very tolerant of going through NATs and going across different boundaries. And even it doesn't really put any requirements of having unique addressing in the two different VPCs. If they had completely overlapping addressing and you're trying to send packets you captured on an instance with IP1111 to a tool instance that's in a different VPC and also has the IP1111, that's fine. It just copes with that. And actually, the source and the tool don't even have to be in the same cloud provider, as long as you don't mind sending the bandwidth across the internet, peer-to-peer VPN is encrypted. It's just a matter of are you willing to pay for that bandwidth? So you can run tools in Amazon that are monitoring infrastructure in Azure or vice versa, or you can run some of it in your data center. All of that's fine. It copes with those kinds of networking things very seamlessly.
In fact, we do have existing customers who do have tools in their on-prem data center. And surprisingly, they do want to channel that traffic to their on-prem tools. And the reason why I said surprising, because they do want to send significant amount of traffic. Now, they're not sending all the traffic because Cloud Lens, of course, can filter it. So only send, you know, subcategory of the traffic. But we do actually see this where they say, you know what, I already have my on-premise tools and I just want everything to be channeled to my on-premise data center. It was surprising to me, but that's a very valid use case that we see often.
And really, the VPN tunnel piece, I wanted to highlight that first of all. That enables that. You know, so first of all, you get that point-to-point ability, that overlay ability to kind of run over whatever infrastructure you might be faced with. And then that data is encrypted. So whatever is in that packet payload that you're copying for tool analysis is, if it isn't already encrypted itself, which a lot of times it might be, but you're encrypted. So you can run that across the public internet if you need to, between cloud providers if you need to. And that's okay. So that's kind of, it just gives you infinite flexibility.
It does, yeah.
That's right, yeah. We really wanted our customers to be able to define how their network is configured based on their business use case without a bunch of kind of extra add-on requirements, so that we don't add on any requirements. And one thing just to make sure it's clear, this is a VPN, but it's a peer-to-peer VPN. There's no VPN gateway involved. These go directly from source to tool, these tunnels, so that there's no bottleneck, no single point of failure kind of VPN gateway that you have to deal with. So again, we're trying to avoid adding extra infrastructure to manage and deal with and plan around.
But you've still got the same, the metadata around the instances, because you know which. So once you're into a VPC, once you're into AWS or Azure or Google, you know, whichever, as you grow, it's going to change over time. But you've got all the metadata around the instances. So when you've provisioned them, you know, you've attached metadata as to what that instance is, what it does, why it exists. And when your API tools go to configure it, you now know much more about it. It's not just like, you know, server VM 1041, where you don't know what it is, or MS SQL 04. You have a whole lot of metadata, right? And that metadata can be combined inside of your product to start giving you a lot more granular detail about what exactly is going on.
That's right. So that's an important part of how we can kind of react autonomously to the customer's network is we collect all this, the agent lives inside the customer instance. And because it lives there, it's able to get information that we wouldn't see just from watching the network from a tap. So we can see things like what AMI it was launched from, or what EC2 tags are on it, or all kinds of metadata about the instance. And we collect that up to our management service. And so when you define your config, it's not defined in terms of, you know, an IP address or something. I mean, if you're used to the data center kind of monitoring, you're probably used to maintaining lists of physical ports on switches or lists of IP addresses and things. But our config is defined at a higher level against this metadata. So really what happens is you describe the instance that you're trying to monitor in the form of a search against this metadata. So it might be, give me all of the instances that are tagged with a role of web server, or it could be any other kind of thing that makes sense and given your application. But so based on that description, we sort of categorize all the instances into a group. And when you define your config, you define it based on these groups. And by the way, it's the same thing on the tool side, that your tool instances that are doing the monitoring, you're doing a search for, things tagged role equals tool or role equals IDS or whatever. And so because we have this description of the instances, we know the kind of the intent of what the user is doing. And that means that rather than a list of IPs that we don't know why it's the IPs are there, and when it changes, somebody has to tell us that there's a change. In this case, if there's a change, if there's a scale out event and a bunch more instances start up, then we're able to build a list of who we're going to monitor just by looking at them and seeing if they fit the description. You're like, those look four or five more web servers.
But I can also gather them up inside of your CloudLens dashboard and start to say, show me all the, Microsoft SQL instances I've got in my AWS, or how many Nginx's, or...
That's right. That's right.
I can start to see my Nginx load balances and start to say, show me all the packets coming in and out of my Nginx load balance, and start looking for a front-end attack. Like, you quite often, people deploy Nginx in load balancer as a TCP load balancer, and if you're going to see a DDoS or some sort of application-level attack, capturing packets in that level is... immediately where I'm going to start to see stuff, and I need to have visibility. Although there are DDoS tools inside of some of the clouds, they're not necessarily tuned for application attacks or certain types of attacks, like someone's overloading your shopping cart or something like that. There's a whole bunch of stuff where you still need visibility.
That's right. That's right. Is it a DDoS attack, or are you just, do you just have a wildly popular product that everyone wants to purchase, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, we have kind of the list of all the instances there, and we have all the metadata about them, and you can search based on that metadata. And it's provider agnostic, right? So if your instances are in AWS, they show up. If they're in Azure, those show up too. So you can, like, if you have a failover event or something, you can see like the count in this group go up and the count in that group go down. It's all things that you kind of have visibility to from our dashboard.
Mind if I ask you a couple more infrastructure kind of questions? Some things that popped in my head here. One is about private cloud and hybrid infrastructure. Now, we've talked about CloudLens in the public cloud, and we've talked about its ability with the VPN tunnel to push traffic into a tool that's maybe in my private data center. Does CloudLens also run on my private clouds, so that I got one Visibility Fabric tool that I'm working with, or would I work with a different tool for my on-premises hardware?
For the past few weeks, we were thinking about, okay, well, there's no reason actually why this shouldn't work in a private data center. I mean, we do have a private data center solution, both on the physical side as well as on the virtual side. That virtual side, supports VMware and OpenStack, this and that, but... if you look at how flexible CloudLens is, we thought, well, why not just run these containers on your private data center, and you will still, it's just one tool to get the same benefit. So there's active discussions happening. I'll say that we have plans, but I can definitely, for the technical side, I'll let Chris and Murali chime in.
Right, absolutely. There's nothing stopping customers from actually using the same Visibility Fabric in their private clouds too. The way we've developed the infrastructure is that it can be run on any VMs, basically any host.
Because it's just a container, and if you've got the infrastructure to stand it up, in theory, why wouldn't you? Why couldn't you? Right.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's right.
So that's one question. It sounds like coming, capable, and we'll see what Ixia decides to do with that. Depending on what customers are looking for. Okay. Another question then is, we talk about filtering capability. So if you want to send data from a public cloud to something offsite, outside of that public cloud, you're now consuming bandwidth, and that's a cost. There's a practical cost to just latency and the practicality of moving a potentially large amount of data, and then there may be other costs incurred as well to move those bits. So how granular can I actually filter? Is this 5-tuple? Is this application recognition? How deep can I go and do that filtering?
What we provide is really a Berkeley packet filter. So if you're familiar with the kind of filtering you can do with TCP dump, it's essentially the same as that. So which basically means it's kind of up through layer 4, any of the kind of packet headers, you can filter on those things.
Okay. Okay, so that's essentially that's a five tuple. Gives me that level of granularity to control what I'm sending off into my visibility fabric to be analyzed by a tool. All right.
Yeah, it's a five tuple if it's TCP, but it can also filter like on other protocols like ARP or ICP.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
Okay, let's just talk a little bit about the licensing model, because most cloud pricing tends to be based on scale. Am I going to be paying upfront and then a usage fee, or is it all usage fee? How does that work?
It's usage based, and we really want to adopt a cloud model, just like as Chris was mentioning when he gave us a couple of examples. During the day you don't have too much traffic, but on the weekend if you're a Super Bowl commercial, all of a sudden your traffic explodes. So we didn't want to go with this. This legacy hardware-based approach where we say, or the legacy software-based approach where we force people to buy licenses for peak throughput, and if they don't use it, well, suck it up. We said, let's just adopt cloud principles, and that is pay as you go. It's literally usage-based. So there's a charge for the instance interface, and there's a charge for the bandwidth, and the reason for this is that because, of course, as the more interfaces that you have to track, you just have... just scales with the cost, and as well as the bandwidth, right? Because you're filtering data. If you're not sending too much data, then why is pay more? But if you're sending a ton of data to your tools to be analyzed, well, then it would go up. So licensing is really usage based, and that usage would be based on bandwidth as well as a number of interfaces that you are tracking. By the way, when you sign up, there's a free period where you can just try it. And the great thing about it, again, is that you don't actually have to commit. You can just say, oh, you know what? I have potentially 10,000 instances, but you know what? I'm just going to start with 5 instances. Let me just figure this out. I want to play around with it, not burden finance or procurement and all that stuff. Let me just see if it really scales. If it really is it really flexible? Can I really filter it? Can I really send it to my off-prem tools? It's a great model. And then if you do like it, you do increase the instances. And of course, there's the economies of scale, right? So if you pass a certain threshold, we'll lower the price per instance so that if you're, if you're paying $1 for one instance, you wouldn't pay the same amount for 10,000 instances. By the way, that $1 was an example, right? So just, don't take it. It is not that expensive at all. Right. And we try to, we understand that, most of the budget might go to your security tools. So when you compare the overall cost of deploying on Amazon, EC2 instances, all the Amazon services, all your tools, it really just becomes a very small line item.
So that means as a security person, if I'm putting the budget together, I'm paying the licensing fees to Exia, but the developers are paying for the CPU burn to run the agents on the hosts, I guess.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yes.
That's important. Yeah. Because I don't want to pay for it out of my budget. So the security budget doesn't stretch very far, so that works out pretty well for me.
I'm surprised to hear that, actually, Greg, because what I've been seeing is that the security teams are just flush with cash. Maybe you need to talk to your manager, Greg. Really?
I really think this model could work. The more you can transfer security costs out of the security budget, more security we can probably actually deploy decent coverage. So I'm in favor of this.
In fairness to your point, security does seem to be super hot in enterprise where those projects are getting funded. So yeah, your point is well taken.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Typically, that's the way we see it, right? The network operations teams have barely any budget, barely any tools. They're always under stress to deliver. And the server teams typically have all the tools, and the security teams have all the budget. And there's always this internal fight in terms of who pays for what, who's delivering what. It's always a constant struggle, and this is where network monitoring brings all these worlds together, right? There's a bit of compute, a lot of security, and a lot of network, and we see this play out every time. Typically, if it comes out of the security budget, it really just feels like a drop in the bucket. And that's what we see where the most successful deployment model.
In a perfect world, it'll just all come out of the cloud budget for at least a few years until they wake up. So maybe that'll work out a little bit better. So maybe we should start wrapping this up then and start talking about how people can find out more information. Where should they go to get more information about the Cloud Lens solution?
Sure. So we have a dedicated website just for packet pushers. So if you go to exiacom.com/go/packetpushers, there'll be a link to this podcast as well as a link for Cloud Lens. And just to do a plug for you guys, we did do a tech field day back in November. At that time, the product was not out, but there was a really good technical presentation by Chris. That, of course, is on techfieldday.com/company/Exia, and you can find all the Exia videos there. But yeah, if you just go to exiacom.com and search for CloudLens, it will be there. And we also have a YouTube channel for various CloudLens videos. But again, for you guys, exiacom.com/go/packetpushers, you'll see the podcast, you'll see all the links for CloudLens. Again, sign up. I feel like I'm one of those Hollywood guys who go to say, you know, watch my video or buy my book. It's really, really good.
Don't forget to go here to subscribe. No, it's important because it allows you to understand, you know, it's part of the process. The Tech Field Day videos were very good. I would recommend them as well. You did a great job of putting those together. They actually do a good deep dive. Like, all Tech Field Days are very good, but the Exia presentation was very useful in terms of preparing for this, in getting a deeper understanding of where the company comes from and some of the visibility fundamentals. If you're not familiar with making visibility fabrics, it's a very good place to start to understand this concept of, you know, capturing packets somewhere, taking them into a fabric, filtering out the stuff that you don't want, or filtering the things that you do want, depending on your security posture or what you're trying to tool up for, and then sending them away for troubleshooting or for visibility or for passing them on to security instances. And keep in mind that you can build a visibility fabric. A lot of people don't think about this, but you can build a visibility fabric so that you get things like SPAN and RSPAN and ERSPAN that you're using today. You can use these tools from Exia to do the same or give you the same functionality. I want to see the packet flow that's going right at this point, and this is what's going to, you know, you're moving down this path with the Exia tooling in the public cloud. With that, I'd like to thank the team from Exia for joining us today. Thank you, Recep, Chris, and Murali for joining us today and going deep onto the Exia Cloud Lens solution and talking a little bit about their cloud fabrics. So if you really want to know more, go over to exiacom.com/go/packetpushers. And that's it for this podcast today. You can find many more fine free technical podcasts along with our community blog and news site at packetpushers.net. You can follow us on the Twitter as at packetpushers. And of course, we lurk on LinkedIn, hang out on Facebook, but also all over the iTunes, because apparently that's where you're all listening to this. And last but not least, remember that too much technology would never be enough.